All right. Oh man, I just want to express a sincere thankfulness and gratitude for you being here on the Single, Obsolete, and Dangerous podcast, a podcast where Black folk and white people can come and talk about the things they think, speak, and act as it relates to racism, white supremacy, and white people, but don't know how to say it constructively. So, State Representative Ed Gainey, I want to
Hello.
thank you so much for coming here on the SOD podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. And thank you.
Yes, sir. One thing that really sparked, I wanted to touch base with you, but I want to take a moment to hear you on the floor talking about a situation that really just touched my heart. And I was like, you know what? Let me call brother Ed and say, man, I gotta have you on my podcast.
I appreciate that.
Here it goes.
I rise today to oppose House Bill 564. The one thing I admit is that I've been privileged. I've been very, very privileged. From kindergarten to 12th grade, I've learned how to study European history. Whether we want to call it social studies, social science, or history, from kindergarten to 12th grade, I've learned how to study European history. I understand it. The problem is, we've never studied American history. We've never studied how blacks, Latinos, Jews, Asian, Koreans, Chinese, all ethnicities have helped to build this great country called the United States of America. We have all had an opportunity as an ethnicity to help build this country. And we have never studied American history. And if we even take it back to the 60s, when we had literacy tests, poll text tax, that we could only vote if we knew a certain thing. Until we get to the point that we can say we the people, because we studied every ethnicity to help build this great land called the United States of America, if we really had it a test that talked about American history and every ethnic group that helped build American history, how many people in here would pass that test today? Very few people would pass if we had to talk about African American, Latino, Asian, Korean, Jewish, and all other ethnicities that helped build this great land. So before we can say we the people, let's study we the people so we can know each other. And in knowing each other, we can erase things like bigotry, hate, and racism, and introduce education, love, and respect for one another. Then we can have an American test that speaks to the values of America.
Here we go. Man, that was, I heard, when I first heard that, I was like, you know what? I gotta get him on the show. And because he was saying so much. It was so weighty about the history, about what you were really learning. And I just was like, let me just get him here, let him do his thing, and then we're gonna do the SOD gauntlet. But I just wanted to just give you that chance, man. When you were saying about you were grateful, in the aspects of the American history that you learned, were you grateful because you learned exactly what is going on, or you were grateful because, man, it couldn't have been nothing else that you could have learned?
I was grateful because, like I tell everybody, you want to know people, right? And so K through 12 was the opportunity, not by choice, but by curriculum, to learn European history. I had to learn that. Whether you want to call it social science, social studies, or history, we had to learn it every single day.
Would civics be part of that European history?
Civics is American history. You can't have civics without American history. You can't separate the two. And that's what my problem was, what we talked about, was that, you know, I wasn't against the bill in regards of saying that our children should know civics. Of course not. I'm not against that. What I was against was the fact that if we're talking civics, the first 20 or so presidents, my people couldn't even vote for. So my pathway to voting is different than what a European or Caucasian,
white person's
a white person's path to voting is. And I think as Americans, we have to learn, how did African Americans come to vote? How did Latinos come to vote? How did Koreans come to vote? How did Asians come to vote? How did Jews come? How did we come to vote? To say that the curriculum should just be about white presidents and voting, that's part of the American experience, but it's not the broader, it's not American history altogether. American history altogether has to be inclusive, because we've all come from different ways of getting to vote. That is civics.
Cool question. I'm a practitioner and avid student of Dr. Hunt, John Henry Clark, peace be upon him. And he would say that the missing pieces of world history is African history. They said that the work that we do is to get a respectful commentary in the history, the question and the dialogue of history. If we were to really present, as you're saying, question, if we were really to be inclusive of all these people in American history, how much would white people in the totality of the conversation be? Do white people contribute equally to non-white people in this country as it relates to the civics and to the history? Is there an equal participation?
We all have culture. Every ethnicity has a culture. And every culture has a way that they go about life. So in the essence of that, yes, we all have a part to play. And we should all know that, particularly when you talk about the melting pot of America. When we talk about the melting pot of America, like I said, I'm happy I learned European history. I'm not mad at that. It's made me a lot more wiser and understand a whole lot more than if I hadn't had it. Hmm. And so I understand the power of education when it comes to history. And I understand how if you educate somebody, you break down ignorance. And I don't have to go no further than we could just talk about people that we know every day in the streets. You know, those that study things, those that's growing their mind are becoming more wise or more relevant every single day because they're growing their thought. And so if you allow people to learn about other people's culture in this great land that we call America, We could only make America better, because we're again retooling our thinking and sharpening our thought and being more open to who we are as Americans. The problem is when we don't know one another, when we haven't studied one another, when we say we're going to have a civics test, and the civics test is only going to be based on our presidents that I couldn't vote for, that my people couldn't go vote for, that we don't understand how we had a literacy test, how we don't understand how we had a poll tax in order for us to vote at first before the 1964 voting law. There's a lot that we have that we did not get the same right in regards to civics, in regards to voting, and in regards to government that other ethnicities have gotten. And so my thing is, if we're going to do this, let's make sure we're inclusive of all, because if we all have a culture, why shouldn't we know it? If I took my kids to Myrtle Beach, right? And my two youngest is 10 and 8. And so they hadn't heard, because we from Pittsburgh, they hadn't heard fluent Spanish.
Right.
But when they heard it, they was like, Daddy, what is that? And I said, that's called the Spanish language. You understand what I'm saying? Because they have to know that. That's what I mean. Our brothers that's Spanish, our brothers that's Mexican, our brothers that's Latin, listen, they still are brothers and sisters. And because they down south and they're moving in here, and we should understand Spanish language. There's no catching. If we are going to study language, particularly as we move to be more global, we need to have English courses that are teaching not only American history, not only American English, but also Spanish, but also Chinese, also whatever it is that they need to study to make their mind more focused, to make their mind more ready. Mm-hmm. We need to be educating them on that level.
Was there any pushback? And I'm going to be specific. Was there any white state representatives that pushed back from what you had said on the House floor?
Right. So, yes, because they introduced the bill. Right. There was two. One was from Pennsylvania. I mean, one was from Allegheny County, and I can't remember where the lady was from. And, you know, their thing was that our kids should know civics, that this is something that is good for our children. They should know who our presidents are, and they should know how we vote. They should know these things. Maybe we could spark an interest in getting people to the polls. But again, you can't spark interest if you ain't talking about being inclusive. And that's what had me rise up on the floor, because they were promoting it as this is American history. And it's only a part of American history. It's not the full, it's not American, it's not the full scope of American history. Because I have to be able to talk about, and it should be taught, about how African Americans came to vote. How Latinos came to vote. I mean, we all have a pathway. We were not given the same opportunity. And for us to understand each other better, it should be in the history books so that people have appreciation for our journey. Because to be quite frank, you know, our culture is rich in journey. I mean, you talking about people that came here from a boat, were separated from their families. It ain't this deep. They want to separate, as we just talked about, them kids at the borders from their moms, as if history isn't reflective of exactly when it was dead when we came over here. But on top of that, we've overcame that. Mm-hmm. Then they hit us with Jim Crow, and we overcame that. Then they hit us with segregation. We overcame that. Mm-hmm. Then we had the how do we get in the integration of schools, and how do we get into not being able to buy homes? Then we got into civil rights. Then we got into mass incarceration. When you think of the journeys that we've taken, there's a lot of profound wisdom, power, strength, and growth there. Mm. And if that is not taught in American history, then we are leaving just how strong this country is based on the different ethnic races that help build it.
Question about that. Is it to non-white people, particularly black folk, to allow other non-white people to wrap themselves in black folks' suffering to the extent to where that we were the trailblazers and now some other non-white people are coming? And this is the thing, and you're absolutely right. We didn't come here, we didn't get a free lunch. We didn't get a pat on our, you know what I'm saying? We didn't get that. But there have been many other non-white people who came after us, and because of our experience and because of what we went through, they have been able to wrap themselves in black folks' suffering, to kind of paraphrase Dr. Claude Anderson. Is that in it, and to the point to where now, where we have been the majority minority for almost 200, 300 years, there are contingencies and special interest groups in this country who are saying you have been the number two for too long, and we're going to move you from being that number two down to actually the place to be number four. Now, I'm not that intelligent. I'm not that smart. But I do know. I do know we didn't get anything at number two. We surely ain't gonna get anything if we're number four.
Yeah, but I think
that's so my question is, where do we as black folk, where do we put that in this sharing of other people who are non-white, because they're all experiencing white supremacy. But now we have other people who are not classified as white who are now almost supplanting and subverging us. And this is happening. And also, let me preface this also say, my mother is a Latin woman. I'm half Latin prospectively. So I have very intimate experience and interaction when seeing what it's like when Latin people are among themselves talking Spanish and speaking Spanish. Black folk go around and they don't know what they're saying. And I'm listening like, oh, man. And I don't want to say what they're saying. And they can't even pick up. They don't even know that I will pick it up or I'll see it. You know? So I know very well that a lot of times they are trying to do that. I'm not speaking about this brown power thing, but there are a majority of contingencies as it relates to Latin people who want to replace the position that black folk have had as it relates within this white supremacy power structure.
Right. Human suffering is human suffering. And there's no question about that. You know, we can talk about degrees of suffering. The human suffering is human suffering. And a lot of times we play right into that. You know what I mean? So again, I think it's that look in the mirror, as we discussed earlier. It's that look in the mirror. I know there's a lot of people that have grown based on the success of African Americans.
Indeed.
The civil rights is a prime example of that. You know, there's a lot of people off of civil rights have had a lot of success off of what we fight for. There's no question. But even in the civil rights movement, you have to remember you had a whole lot. And then throughout history, you've had other races help us as well. You know, so they, again, human suffering is human suffering. I'm more concerned about who wants us to have, who wants to help us make a just world, right? Because at the end of the day, if I don't care about, it's like I told people about the drug game, right? So we had crack. And when the crack hit the hood, nobody cared about it. Lock them up, throw them in jail. They savages.
Super predators.
Right. All they is drug dealers. And that's just them. It's an urban thing. Urban meaning it's a black thing.
That's
so
right.
All we have to do, they never gave us public health. They only gave us public safety. And public safety will never improve public health. Only public health can improve public safety. So when they did this, then we became cattle for the prison system, right? Because of the drug dealing, because of the drug using. And now you in the fourth generation of crack, great grandmother, right? So now we have an opioid explosion, correct? And this opioid explosion is killing the white community, like crack devastated the black community, just at a more alarming rate. But now we have moved more into a different norm of dealing with it from a public safety standpoint. And in my community, when I hear them say, hey, we don't care about what happened when that opioid explosion, when crack hit, they didn't care about us. They didn't care about us at all. All they did was lock us up or just say that we were savages. So why should I care? And what I tell them when they say that, because I need them to understand that suffering is suffering, is that that same drug that's out there is coming back here. And if we don't do something to come up with a solution to how to deal with this thing called American drugs, then the same suffering they got, guess who's going to get it? Us. Just like the suffering they're getting now, it started with us when they moved crack through our neighborhood. The only difference now is that they're trying to deal with it from a public health perspective and not really a public safety. But hardcore, be tough on crime. Legislatures are still saying, no, we gotta lock them up and throw away the key. Human suffering is human suffering. It's not about whether you black, white, Latino, or whatever. If you on drugs, you're addicted. That's a suffering. And the only thing they didn't do, if you wanted to have an answer for this opioid, you should have did something for crack. Because if you would have did something for crack, you would have had a solution for this over here. But I don't know, because they were ignorant enough not to have a solution with us, for us not to think about a solution over here, knowing that it can come back from our hood. Human suffering is human suffering.
The SOD podcast, bro. I'm not pushing back. Wouldn't that be, though? Would the opioid epidemic be the chickens coming home to roost in the white community? Because of their inaction with crack and the black community.
It's called ignorance. It's called American ignorance. And here's why. Because when you didn't care about me, you only opened the door for it to visit you.
That's right.
And so out of your ignorance, because you've seen it as a race thing and not a human thing, now all of a sudden you're experiencing something at a greater rate than what we experienced with crack.
Because people weren't ODing on crack.
They were jacked up, though.
They were jacked up.
Because, well, I mean, we can go, you know, I'm on the high rise, so I know about
it. We were jacked up, and it was...
So we were jacked up. Now, not just jacked up, bro. We was jacked up bad. I mean, that crack, I mean, it hit... I'm talking
devastated.
About, yeah, man. The impact of crack, it'll be another 20, 30 years before that go... Because you talking about grandmas that wasn't there, man. You talking about my age right now, growing up in households where they seen mama go through some things that you wonder how they survived. You understand what I'm saying? Crack was that powerful. It took my daddies out of the neighborhood. You understand?
Indeed.
It hurt us. The crack era devastated my mothers. You know, that's the bottom line. We had kids. That's why you see so many kids, they grew up in that. That's all they knew. That's all they knew. And all I'm saying is on this end over here, as the drug has gotten stronger, you know, let's be honest, man. We can't stop the drug game. It's about who controls it. We've spent $70 billion in 50 years on a war on drugs that I call a war on black and brown people just because we playing with people's lives. If you want to heal something, you don't make it a public safety issue. You make it a public health issue. Our people are hurting. This drug culture is phenomenal. And as long as it's not regulated, it's going to continue to grow and take life. You got more drugs on your streets now than you've ever had before. Carfentanil, fentanyl, and all this other stuff. Because we spun $70 billion in 50 years to fight a war against, a war on drugs that every society since the beginning of time have gotten high. How you going to stop with society since the beginning of time have not been able to stop?
I've been reading a book called Dreamland. It was written by Sam Keone. It's a very intense. It talks about the opioid epidemic, and he gives a very particular critique about the development, which is phenomenal. To add to this opioid epidemic, in that book, he'd expressed that the feeling and the realization that society is having the same, making it more public health, because they realized that it was pharmaceutical and doctors that are the underpin that really created the opioid epidemic. And they don't want to say that. Doctors and pharmaceutical companies. And so because they're seeing that, because you know what's the other thing that also was shown? When it was crack that was connected to cocaine, right? That was a harvested plant from non-white countries particularly, right? And here is, like as you said, carfentanil. Carfentanil is not grown in no poppy field. Carfentanil is a synthetic. It's made in a laboratory, a real laboratory with a GC mass spec and all Bunsen burners and beakers and everything. So there, you can't blame the coca fields or the poppy fields for the opioid epidemic when you have these synthetic drugs that are actually made in laboratories that are not ran and controlled by non-white people.
So one is, and I'm for this, and I've expressed my support for it. I believe that we should sue the pharmaceutical companies. I believe that
is there any bills? Right. Is there any bills that come to the floor about dealing with that?
There's been some attorney generals that have banded together to sue the pharmaceutical company. So you haven't seen it because they're actually planning.
Working on it?
A class action against it. So that's coming, but California was the first to do it. California sued them, you know. So I think that you have to sue them because it was a marketing scheme, to influence people that I can alleviate your pain.
Pain, quickly. That's right.
You know what I mean? And so what I've learned is that, and here we go with that suffering again. When I broke my leg, I was young. I didn't get no opioid. I didn't get no pill. You just had to deal with that pain, and it healed over time correctly because you had to do the things that you had to do.
Physical therapy
to get it right. You know, I don't need a microwave feel good. I don't want an opioid that's going to take away my pain for 6 hours, and then when it wears off, you know, I got to hurry up and take another one. I'm creating addiction. I'm creating addiction, and I don't want to addict myself. So that's why we should sue the pharmaceutical companies.
Wow.
I agree. This synthetic, they should be sued.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm on record for saying they should be sued.
You know, heroin was created by Bayer Labs in Germany.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Heroin was actually created in 1893. In Germany, and actually the first test subjects were actually the bear workers, and the word heroin came from the word that they used because it made them feel heroic, so that's where the word heroin came. But heroin was created by a pharmaceutical company.
See, that's what I'm saying. That's why you have to sue them. But again, you know, that's why there has to be more dialogue. So when people say, hey, you know, they're suffering over there because of this opioid situation, it's nothing for me to feel good about. Because I know at some level the drug comes back to my community, and it'll be just like when crack left here, what they dealing with now is much stronger. And now when they come back to my community or the next, or whatever community in America they come to, it's going to be stronger. Mm-hmm. And all I'm saying is, so when we talk about suffering, should we care? Should it matter? Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, what impacts one impacts them all. Absolutely. Like you said, they come home to roots. But yeah, because we allowed ourselves to be ignorant about the drug and we made it about the people, right?
Right.
So the people was incarcerated. The people was animals. The people was this. The people was that. It had nothing to do with the people. It was the drug.
You know,
and people will say, well, they made a choice to get high. Okay, but they didn't make, you know, okay, yeah, I can't disagree with that. Mm-hmm. But I haven't met one yet that made a choice to get addicted.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get in the mix. Here we go. Question: are you white or are you non-white?
I'm black.
All right, so would you be considered non-white or white?
I don't know. I don't get into that. I'm black. Okay. I tell people all the time, you know, there's only one way to define me. I'm a black man.
Okay.
And so I don't worry about how the world puts me in a category.
Okay.
Because I know I'm a black man.
Right.
And I know as a black man, that's how I was birthed, and that's how I'm gonna leave here as a black man. That's all I know.
Are you mistreated because you are black or because you're not white?
Well, hold on. What do you mean by mistreated first?
Okay. Your experience with racism, white supremacy, is it in existence?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. Okay. So, are you mistreated because you are black or because you're not white?
I'm mistreated out of ignorance of them not knowing who I am as a black man. I'm mistreated and I deal with racism based on an ignorant education that they received growing up that made them believe that I was something other than human. Mm-hmm. I'm a black man. And I can't, of course you deal with racism. Of course we do. But what I try to do for me, and I'm only talking about Ed, is I try not to be defined by nothing but how I want to define myself.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, I don't want to chase definitions and I lose perspective of who I am.
Gotcha.
And I don't want to ever lose perspective on who I am. Of course I'm going to deal with racism.
Right.
I mean, you know, we just talked about the civics test and why I spoke on it and why I spoke on the Grandview 5.
Right.
Because that was a racist. I mean, the civics test wasn't really about racism. It was about the fact that you want to be inclusive enough to understand who we are. So in many aspects, I take that back. That is a slight form of racism. But the Grandview 5 was racist. That was racism at its highest. You tried to get rid of 5 moms on a golf course playing golf, where you heard white people say that was behind them, well, they're fine, they're moving just fine. You know, but they had a choice. They had a choice to either act out outside of themselves, or they had a choice to organize and try to find a way to change things. And so them coming to the state capitol, partnering with Senator Hughes, who's been a great advocate in leading this fight to make sure that there's quality, that to make sure that we address it in a way we know it's going to happen again, but to address it in a way that we are letting people know that we're just not going to sit by and handle it and take it. That's different. I'm getting ready to drop a bill now that, you know, if it's like a fire alarm, if you're in a movie theater and you've pulled that fire alarm, that's a crime. You know what I mean? Because you've wasted taxpayer dollars having the fire department come there. Well, if you and I sitting here right now and someone called the police because they say we getting too loud or because we got on black, whatever they may call the police on, and they come here and we ain't doing that, that's just like pulling that fire alarm. That's false. That's a waste of taxpayer dollars.
That's right.
That person, that entity, that business should be fined. They should have to pay a fine because they incited something that wasn't real. You have to address it in a way economically that we begin to make a statement. Mm. And so my bill will talk about how that happens. Because I believe that if you falsely accuse me, you should be fined.
Mm. I appreciate that. If we were to bring a white person in here right now, would they think that you're white?
No.
So then you're not white.
Yeah, no, I got that, but you gotta be, you're right, but not, but for me, I need them to know I'm a black man.
Could you be Dominican? Because you look
I can only be a black man.
But is there not Dominicans that look like you?
Yes, but I'm a black man.
There's Panamanians that look like you?
Yeah, but still, at the end of the day.
So they're black, regardless of what they are.
But when at the end of the day, I live my life as a black man.
Okay.
Because I've experienced the black culture. I come out of a black culture. I am born black. My mama's black. My daddy's black. They had a black son. They had a black daughter. We black.
Okay.
And so I always let people know I'm a black man.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I can't be Dominican. I can't be Latino. I can't be nothing but what I was birthed to be.
True indeed.
A black man.
True indeed.
And so that's who I am.
Okay.
You know, and I that's why I say I respect all cultures.
True.
Because we all born man of different ethnicity. We all are. Mm-hmm. And so I respect all that. But my race is I'm a black man.
Okay. Do you have any white friends?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or absolutely. Would you consider them like allies, white friends and allies?
Well, I consider some of them, yeah, some of them very, very good, very
and,
good.
And do you guys talk
done about... Done a lot mm-hmm. for me in my life. And I couldn't be where I'm at without some of them because they've helped me along the way. And I'm not talking about career-wise. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about growth-wise.
True indeed.
You know what I mean? Like, they deposited in me. Mm-hmm. They poured into me.
Okay.
And so, you know, I can't never not credit them for helping me along this journey. Because to do so would take away from what they've given me. So I'm I understand the perspective. But you know, my ability is to learn from all that, give me the will to want to deposit in me in a way that helps me grow. Okay. Because like I said before, man, for me, for Ed, life is about how much I grow.
Okay.
And you get wisdom from a multitude of places if you open. True. The day you close your mind based on color, then we become as ignorant as the ones that we say need to open their mind to education.
True indeed.
And so we have to be very careful that we ask one thing but don't have the same expectation of ourselves.
So don't get caught up in color.
I get caught up on people. If I get caught up on color, then I'm just as bad as them. I have to see the heart of men is the heart of men. What you have in your heart is reflective in your character. And so I understand that. So I'm looking at the heart of men because I've been done wrong by multitudes of races. But when we talk about the system of racism, that's a whole different system. But in terms of people, I've also been blessed by multiple races.
Okay.
And so I got to look at the person. I can't look at just what his color is. I got to look at the person because the heart of that man or the heart of that woman is going to let me know who they are.
Would you want people to do the same with you?
Yes.
So then it does not matter that you're black then?
No, it does matter. It does matter. It doesn't take away from me being black. I'm a black man.
But if we get caught up in the color, then you being the black man is inconsequential.
Mm-mm. No, it's not.
So it is important that you are black.
But here's why it's not inconsequential.
Okay.
Because I'm a black man, don't mean that I can't have respect for other men or women of other races.
What about them to you?
And hear me out.
Okay.
Of other races.
Right.
I can't be nothing but who I am. A black man. They that receive me, that's fine. Those that reject me, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I can't allow myself to worry about how they feel about me.
Right.
I have to be me 24/7, all day, every single day.
Okay.
And in this journey called life, there will be some, regardless of color, that will accept me and some that will reject me. But the ones that accept me, then I call them my friend.
Okay.
The ones that reject me, I don't call them my enemy.
Right.
I just say we have differences But I don't want nothing to happen to him. Uh-huh. I don't have that type of envy or that type of injury in me where I want to see something negative on them. I just want to be me. And that's what I'm going to be. So, yeah, we can say, well, you know, does race matter? Of course race matters in America. We talked about that before. That's why the Civics thing bothered me. That's why the Grandview 5 thing bothered me. That's why the Subway, Starbucks thing bothered me. But I'm still me.
Okay.
And I still have to walk this walk knowing what I have to face. Because if I don't walk my walk and I don't know what I have to face, then I'm not doing a good job. I gotta walk this walk. And I can't base my life on what people feel about black people, Latino people. I look at it this way. If you got love for people, then I got love for you.
One thing that I do know, that race is a construct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an idea that was created by particularly white men. And in that construct, and in that idea of creating race based upon color, what has been created in this system that you express that you and I are in,
mm-hmm.
that being white and not being white is a very particular situation.
Yeah.
That's why I ask, in the context of white supremacy, are you white or non-white? I'm not asking you if you're black. I just need to know right off the rip. This is the very first question I ask. Are you white or non-white? Because being white has nothing to do with skin tone. Let me finish this. Being white has nothing to do with the skin. Being white is based upon a very particular set of qualifications. One, do you see yourself as white? Two, do other white people see you as white? And three, do you originate from people who come from Europe, the Middle East, or North Africa? These are the qualifications that make somebody white. Because there are, good brother, people who are darker than you and I who are classified as white, who are white on their passport. There are people who are darker than you and I who see themselves as white. But the issue that, yes, that's what's the second part. But the issue part is that they don't have whiteness.
Right, so
but you can be classified as white, yourself as white,
right,
but don't have no whiteness.
But the key word, uh-huh. and I talked about this before.
Do you see yourself?
How do you
see yourself?
When you look in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
how do you see
exactly.
yourself?
And in the context of whiteness.
Wait a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
And when I look in the mirror,
yeah.
and my reflection in the mirror,
uh-huh.
I don't see nothing but a black man.
You don't see no white.
I don't see nothing but a black man. I don't see no white. I don't see no Latino. I don't see no Asian.
Exactly.
I see a black man.
So when I ask you.
You see what I'm saying?
Though? Right.
I don't see no other race because I'm a black man.
True indeed.
You see what I'm saying? So I that's why I'm saying again. All that's what, as you said, has been constructed, right?
Yes.
But because you constructed, don't mean, I can reject that construct.
You can reject
it. I can reject it.
Regardless,
though I go through society and got to deal with it, right?
As
we discussed,
right.
I can still reject that.
Right.
Because I know I'm a black man.
True indeed.
Because I looked in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I know myself. That's what we said earlier. You said there's some black guys that look in the mirror. I mean, they see themselves, but they see themselves as white.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What I'm saying is that when I look in the mirror, I see myself as black.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why I said there's a difference. You can look in the mirror, right? And see how you look. You know what I mean? Or, you know, you clean shave.
Yeah.
You got your teeth together. You
right.
got your clothes. You can look in the mirror, but that's not looking in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Looking in the mirror is looking in your soul and understanding who you are.
How long does that take?
Well, you should do it every day.
But how long does it? How long did that's a, that sounds like a daily journey. That's a lifelong journey.
It's every day.
So this is the piece.
Uh-huh.
What I am and what I see myself is something that I work on daily.
You better.
But I know for a fact I'm not white.
Yeah.
And so in the context.
But when you look in the mirror.
I know that I'm not white.
Wait, listen. When you look in the mirror,
yeah.
how do you see yourself?
I know that I'm not white. I haven't gotten to. That's as far as I've gotten. I'm going to be honest. I know that I'm not looking at a white man.
But what are you. And you're telling me what you're not.
Yeah.
Listen to what I'm saying.
That is the only
That's
thing.
Cool.
Right.
That's cool.
Right, right.
But knowledge of self is knowing what I am. Hold on. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So, again, I understand what you're not.
Yes.
What are you?
Okay. Again, what I am can be many. I've come across many identities.
What? No. No.
I've come across many identities and many versions of myself. And as you said, it is a daily thing. I am constantly learning who I am. But I know for a fact that for sure that I could put money on, that we can both stand on agreement with, that anyone else could come and look and see. I know that I'm not white. So this, that far in the journey, I've gotten.
Right.
Everything else, I'm still working on, and I don't mind saying that I'm still learning.
And that's good.
You see what I'm saying?
But you being honest with self.
I'm being honest with self.
You being honest.
I just know myself. So, not white.
So check this out. Okay. There's another concept, right?
Okay.
So you saying that I have an opportunity to either accept that or reject that based on how I feel about that, right? So we were talking about, remember I said some people will accept me and some people reject me, because you're talking about me being a black man, will white people, accept that?
No, I said, would a white person think you're white?
Right. So, and I said they can either accept me or reject me. It's the same here. I'm going to accept how you see yourself. Because anything else that if I'm to know you, I got to accept you based on how you project you, right? Okay. Because if I do it any other way, then I'm not learning who you are. And if I'm a friend, I have to know you.
Question.
There has to be a level of intimacy with me and you that is beyond words, but is about knowledge of self.
Okay.
So if that's the case, that's why I asked the question. Who are you? Tell me who you are. Because if you can tell me who you are, then we can begin to build.
I'll let you know.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll reiterate. I don't know who I am, but I know who I'm not.
Okay.
I'm constantly learning.
I know you, I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
Thank you. See what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But
yes.
As we talked about just being just and justice, if I sat here and said, what this dude said, he don't know who he is, I reject him.
That's okay.
You know what I mean? You want to say what I said, that's fine, right?
That's all
right. I reject that, right?
Okay.
But would I be being just to you?
It would depend, unless you would help me if I needed some help.
Right. But no. It depends. My judging you, am I being just to you?
I think you judging me has none of my concern. So. But will you help me if I need some help?
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah. Would you
those
help me?
That have poured into me.
Okay.
I call them my friend.
Okay.
Regardless of race, because they invested in me.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? And their investment has had a return on it because it's helped me to grow.
So
I have to be cognizant of that respect in order to understand who I am.
Okay. I can feel that. In this interaction of these white allies and friends that have poured into you, you guys have talked about racism and white supremacy.
Yeah, some of us have, absolutely. Absolutely. Not all of them.
Not all of them.
My circle is not that large. My circle is small. My association with people is large.
Of course. You're an elected official. I'm pretty sure.
I would have those talks with those that I'm intimate with.
Okay.
Because at that level, there's no judgment, only knowledge.
So
and some of them, because some of them have grown up in the same environment that I've grown up in, they're going to see it differently. Like, I can talk about, a DJ I grew up with, Nick Nice.
Okay.
He grew up in the hood his whole life, Lomer Ave, straight up.
True indeed.
You know what I'm saying? He's going to see life different than someone that's coming from Danville, PA. So me and his conversation could be different. It could be more intimate because he has a lot more understanding than some other peoples that didn't grow up in my neighborhood. And that even and that's even in African America. It's hard. For if you grow up in affluent, to even understand what it is to come up in poverty.
Okay.
Understand what it is, because if you ain't ever had your lights cut off, it's hard to understand that.
As being a non-white person in the hood, a non-white person being in an affluent neighborhood, it would be a different situation. But they both would not be white, regardless whether it's good or bad.
Right, whether it's good or bad, but again, good or bad, we can put that over there. It's about knowledge.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So my whole thing is about, in order to understand how to bring people out of something, I've had to experience it myself.
There's a couple points that you touched on I want to go at. I want to Nick Nice, right? Since you brought him by the
good dude. He's a good
right?
dude, man.
Let me, when we were on the slave ship, mm-hmm. right? The shittiest job on the slave ship was the white sailor. Let me explain to you what happened. The white sailor was responsible for everything that went wrong on the ship. The white sailor had to sit down in the bellows of the slave ship. The white sailor ate the same food as the slaves, just at a bigger portion. Mm. The white sailor had to stay around, and it was that nasty, putrid smell of us defecating on ourselves and dying and decaying in that hot sun boiling under that bellow of the ship. That white sailor even had to take those bodies and carry those bodies and dispose of those bodies. The white sailor had the shittiest job, if you asked anyone. Whenever there was a fight or even a revolt, that white sailor was held responsible. There were many white sailors that even, because they had created so much debt during one voyage, that they had to do two or three voyages for free just to pay for the debt that they created.
Wow.
And these are documented. These are personal documented recordings. Like, the white sailor was the shittiest job of them all, man. Let me tell you something. But I'll tell you what. When that white sailor docked and that ship docked, we grow up in a neighborhood with white people who eat the same food as us, who are in the same vicinity, sleep in the same places as us, even have some of the same experiences as us, right? But when that white sailor docked at that ship, that white sailor could walk off that ship, and many most times that white sailor became a captain of his own ship.
Yes.
What happened to those black slaves that were on the slave ship with him?
Well, we know what happened.
They stayed slaves.
Absolutely.
Even though we may have a Nick Nice, mm-hmm. eat the same food, live in the same area, be in the same vicinity as us, see the same things that we're seeing, mm-hmm. that ability to change their condition, mm-hmm. even though they are in that same place, they're a chance to be exposed to different particular groups and circles. Yeah. It's completely different than our ability to reflect and do the same. Yeah. Now, this is the question I ask, because now I lead up into this question. The conversations that you have had about racism and white supremacy with your white friends or white allies, have they ever told you or given you the names and locations of racist white people that they know?
Not names. They've told me, like, so let's talk about the ones that has moved in but didn't grow up around black people. You know, you can hear some of their stories of how even some of their some of their relatives feel about black people. And the fact that some of their relatives don't really deal or mess with black people. And it gets me to have a conversation, well, what was the difference in you? And get to learn from them how they see people. But when they tell me that some of their relatives didn't like African Americans, you know, I mean, I think that's being real. That's having a conversation. You know, I've never asked for names.
Why?
Because until I talked to you today, I never even thought about asking for a name.
I agree.
You know what I mean? I'll be honest with you. The conversation was just between me and them. You understand what I'm
right.
saying? So, you know, I ain't gonna know them anyway. You know what I mean? I ain't gonna meet them. So for me, the name was irrelevant because I'm not gonna never meet these people. Well, let me finish.
Okay.
So the relevancy for me is we breaking bread, we having this conversation. I'm getting a better perspective of how he grew up or how she grew up and some of the things that they've seen. You know what I'm saying? And I've also been able to share some of the things I've dealt with. You know, going to Holy Rosary, then going to Central Catholic for 2 years, then I didn't go back, going to graduating from Peabody, mm-hmm. going to Norfolk State University,
Norfolk,
and losing my and flunking out my first semester, to coming back and having to go to CCAC, to end up graduating from Morgan State University. That's a journey of diversity. I mean, Holy Rosary, Central Catholic, Peabody High School, Norfolk State, CCAC, Morgan State. Mm. So I've had conversations along those journeys all day long.
True indeed.
That's my journey. And I'm not mad at my journey. that has my journey, hey, listen, I'm my mama's firstborn. I'm the experiment baby. You know what I mean? Because mama couldn't be in a mama without me. I'm an experiment baby. I'm my mama's firstborn. I'm the first one to graduate from college. I remember when I left Morgan, Norfolk State, with a 1.8 average and coming home and looking at my mama's eyes. You know, because your firstborn failed. Your firstborn failed. The one that you sent to college is home in a semester with a 1.8 average. And having to go through that. And so when I say that I've had conversations along the way, there's been multiple conversations. I had a white professor when I was at Morgan tell me, listen, man, you're not maximizing your talent. You just playing. And he was right. I never understood why education was important. I never understood until I got to a point where I was at Morgan State and they birthed into me why education was important. I didn't come from a neighborhood where we discussed education. In my neighborhood growing up, we discussed sports and some other things, but we ain't discussed education. So I never understood the importance of education really until I'm gonna tell you what birthed it is when I flunked out of Norfolk. And that was only because I seen the pain in my mother's eyes. Mm. It grew when I got to Morgan State. Now, I study every day. Every day. Every single day. Mm. And anybody got the wisdom that want to take a moment to give it to me, pour into me, I want that.
In the aspect of white supremacy, racism, you cannot have racism without the racist. And so what winds up happening, just as you cannot have criminality without the criminal. So do we affect and deal with criminality without identifying criminals? No. Well,
let me say that because this is important. This is one of
my
bills.
Go ahead.
And this is what I got a problem with.
Okay.
So I got a whole group of generations that sold drugs.
True.
They got felonies and misdemeanors. Are they criminals?
According to the judicial system? Yeah. Well, have they been convicted?
Yeah, they've been convicted, did their time, right?
They went through
mass incarceration.
True.
Right?
Right.
Mass incarceration.
Okay.
Do you think I'm going to see them as criminals? Forget the justice system, because we already discussed that. Am I going to see them as criminals? Or am I going to try to do everything to be able to restore the freedom that this land has promised them by saying that once I've done my time, I should not have to walk out of jail with a misdemeanor or felony on my neck? I don't see them as criminals. I see them as people that has been done unjust by a system that has tried to keep them down when we should be trying to lift them up. There's no reason for them to have felonies and misdemeanors when they're coming out of jail. They should be given the privilege to be able to live their life just like everybody else. And because of that, regardless of what they say, I don't see them as criminals.
Now, would you know any of those guys' names? Male or females?
Yeah, I know.
And you know.
Yeah.
Right.
I know.
Now, with that same fervor and that same, I know their names, first and last.
I know.
I'm gonna ask that, would it not be imperative as it relates to racism to know who the racists are? First and last name.
And no, I didn't disagree with that. I'm just saying that I never asked. Remember,
and this is a part of the SOD, part of the podcast, is to talk about some of the constructive things in interacting, talking about white people and white supremacy. And one of the things I do see, and one of the things I do interact see and deal with, is that dealing with racism, we need to know who the culprits are. Nobody knows. If you really ask, they'll say, oh, they'll call and they'll say, I said, oh, well, Trump's a racist. Well, if I were to go to Trump and I asked him, do you know such and such? Would he say, well, no, of course not? Well, then you don't know Trump.
Okay.
So all you're doing is speculating. But guess who knows who the racists are?
Other
white people.
I agree with
you. So what I'm asking is, are we having a real constructive interaction with white people as it relates to racism if they do not ever, and we talk about how they feel and how you treat, but they never really give no names?
Right, and I'm asking. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
Uh-huh.
But for me, I never asked.
Okay.
You see what I mean? So I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But I never asked, and the reason why I never asked is because until we had this conversation, they didn't even think about asking. That's number one. Number two is I was more intimate with me and that person's conversation than anything else. And three, I ain't never going to meet them, nor do I want to. So
you know that goes to the next. That goes to the next piece.
Let me finish up because I don't want to. And listen. What I need to know your name for about for real. Because at the end of the day, and I understand where you come from, an educational point. I get that. But for me, you know, again, my circle is small. My association is large. They're not going to be in my inner circle. Well, because I can't have that in my inner circle. You know what I mean?
One thing I want to add to that.
If I got
to
associate with them, we're doing business of some kind. We ain't having no social. We ain't breaking bread. We ain't sitting there having conversations about our family. It's going to be some business.
Question. Is there a potential that your children will cross paths with those racist white people?
Yeah, absolutely. That's
so then it is imperative, at least, that you at least get these names and teach your... Now, this is the thing. Now, this is me. This is just me. I do, when I interact with white people, and for me to find out the so-called allies and things, one of the first things I always do is, oh, you've been around racist white? Yeah, I've been around. Man, I was the only white person in my group who never used the N-word. All of them always used the N-word. I was the only one that never used it. Great. Are you sure? Yes, I would never lie to you, Austin. Okay, did you know who these people were for real? Yes, of course. I mean, I grew up with them. Such and such and such and such. Please, can you give me their first and last name? Why do you want their names? Well, because you said that they're racist. You can confirm that they're racist. Can I at least know who they are so that I can stay away from them? Oh, Austin, you'll never interact with them. Wait a minute. I have children. My children might bump into them, correct? So then at least, can I at least tell my children? Now listen, there are a lot of white people who are not racist. But for sure, these names are racist white people who have been confirmed by other white people. If you hear this name, you stay away from them. I don't care if they smile at you. I don't care if they say, hey, I know a guy who's best friends with your dad. I don't care what they give you. Be polite, but walk away from them. Stay away from them. They're from this area. This is their first and last name. They're from this area. This is their first and last name. I'm asking you, because what do we need to do? We're trying to get rid of racism and white supremacy. And one of the most important aspects of racism and white supremacy is the racist white supremacist. And guess what? If you ask white or non-white people, I assure you, they will not tell you who a racist or white person is. Nobody has the names.
So when I came on, I said wisdom is universal, right?
Okay.
You've thought about this. And, you know, it didn't come to me that way.
True.
Right? So I can only go on how it comes to me. You know what I'm saying? But I understand where you're coming from. You know what I mean?
No. It's, you know, he's laughing like, you know what? Wait a minute, now that makes sense. But,
you know, for me at that time, that's not what came to me. You know what I mean?
True,
we
indeed.
Was just having a conversation, and I could care less who they was. I probably don't care. You know what I mean? If you don't like me because of the color of my skin, I'm cool with that. Ain't nothing I can do about that. I'm not trying. Yeah. Like you heard me say on the video, I don't know what would be in the heart of a man or a woman to hate somebody because of the color of their skin. I really don't. I really don't get it. You know what I mean?
At the end,
because I'm saying I don't get it, don't mean I'm saying I don't understand how the system was created and what it was. That I understand, but I'm talking about at the basis of a man or a woman's heart, how you could, through the years, hate somebody based on the color of their skin.
That's why.
And I'm
that's why I'm trying to say it in white supremacy.
I ain't saying that I don't comprehend it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I don't understand the systematic ignorance of it.
Right.
I understand all that.
Uh-huh.
And it just amazes me that you can still hate somebody based on the color of their skin. I'm sorry, man. It's not that I don't understand it. So it's just that in my heart, I can't hate another person based on the color of their skin. I'm not brought up that way.
Right.
And two is I'm not that person that's going to hate you because of the color of your skin. I'm not. So for me, I can only look at it from how I see life.
Right.
And I'm not blind to that fact that it exists, but I don't want to be a person that hates people because of the color of their skin. That's a choice that I make. And I'm cool with that choice.
One thing I'm gonna let you know from the experience, it's not that either. Mm-hmm. They don't hate you because of the color of your skin. It's because you're not white. See, the issue that they have, white people, especially particularly racist white people, white supremacists, they don't care what you are. In fact, they love black skin. Do you see how much they like to go outside and tan? They love black. They like that black skin thing. The issue and problem is what initially why I asked that very first question is that you're not white. And because you're not white, I can deal, I can see, I can put you in this place, I can make you a slave, I can institutionalize you, I can enslave you, I can put you in a jail because you're not white like me. Now, there are white people who experience destitution. There are white people who experience conflict. But I, from my understanding, is that the degree in which white people experience the same type of mistreatment is only to maintain the astronomical amount of non-white people. So yes, you will have a million white people starving, but that million white people is to maintain the 100 million non-white people to starve. Yes, you will have 10 million white people mistreated around the world, reflective to over 2-3 billion non-white people in a mass poverty. So in comparative terms, I've come to understand that that becomes their usage and techniques and dealings with that.
And that's why I said in the beginning, we can understand the system. What you're just explaining is the system.
Absolutely.
Ain't no question. I get that. You know I do. That's mm-hmm. why you see me introduce what I introduce. So I get that. But I'm still at the point where, because of how I was brought up, mm-hmm. that's all I can base it on. I can't hate somebody, period, by the color of their skin. I can't, because I've seen good content. I've seen good content in many people's characters. And, the system, we deal with the system every day. But for me, my greatest challenge of dealing with the system is the fight for humanitarian cause that I believe move people forward. And that's why I said I can't see certain people as criminals. Even if we say now that we want to judge it by the court of law, I don't see them as criminals. I see them as being oppressed by an oppressive system that has put laws in place that has devastated my community. And I don't think that that's right. So that's why I fight for what I fight for.